Okay, from my count, I believe that we can get started. So we will, it looks like Mary Yarbrough is on the line. Mary?
Hello. Welcome, everybody.
Yeah, good afternoon. So,
Okay. So we have our quorum. Do we want to do the introductions of everyone on the call?
First we have to call the roll for the quorum. So
Okay. Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, I thought you had.
Turn that over to Mark.
Okay, I'll be glad to call the roll. Ms. Leanne Lewis. Dr. Mary Yarbrough.
Here.
Ms. Jennifer Guffey.
Here.
Ms. Carmen Penny holds the proxy for Mr. Josh Heffinger.
I'm here.
Mr. Will Cromer.
Present.
And Dr. Roy Johnson.
Dr. Johnson's running about 10 minutes late. He's finished up with the patient, but he will be joining here in just a few moments.
Okay. And Dr. Robert Snyder.
Here.
All right. We do have a quorum. We have six out of seven just lacking Dr. Johnson, who'll be joining us in a minute. But we do have six out of seven already, so we do have a quorum at this time.
Thanks, Mark. Now, how about, would we like to find out who else is on the call?
Let's start at the top then. Adam Fowler.
Hi, Dr. Snyder. This is Adam Fowler. I'm Director of Regulatory Affairs with MyMatrix.
Okay. Brian Allen.
Good afternoon. Brian Allen, Vanlite Pharmacy Solutions.
Chris Scoma.
Good afternoon. This is Chris Scoma with Results Physiotherapy. I'm a physical therapist.
Dan Hedrick.
This is Dan Hedrick. I'm a physical therapist and industrial specialist with STAR Physical Therapy.
Ken Eichler.
Ken Eichler, American Medical Association.
Kimberly Olson.
Sorry, I just had to unmute myself. Kimberly Olson, legal nurse consultant, bill review specialist with Kim Olson, LNC, Inc.
Larry Brenton.
Hey, Dr. Snyder. Mary Brenton with Acuro Solutions.
Okay. Lori Mulders.
Lori Mulders with Coventry Workers' Comp. I'm a senior regulatory affairs specialist.
Mandy Young.
Mandy Young, representing APCIA, lawyer and lobbyist in Nashville.
Deborah McCabe. Michelle McDaniel.
Good afternoon. I'm Michelle McDaniel, a clinical nurse auditor with Enable Comp.
Natalie Knox.
Yes, Natalie Knox with Enable Comp.
Nicole Van Horn.
Nicole Van Horn, a senior manager of governmental engagements at Fair Health.
Faith Parrish.
Faith Parrish with Vanderbilt Corporate Health.
Pauline Williams.
Pauline Williams, Director of Governmental Engagements with Fair Health.
Latasha Pearson.
Hi, this is Latasha Pearson. I'm a senior managed care specialist with Summit Workers Cost Containment.
Christina Pendrack.
Hi, I'm Christina Pendrack, a professional review nurse for Bell Corporation.
Terry Ann Scarantino.
Yes, sir, Dr. Snyder. This is Terry Ann. I'm a policy analyst for WorkComp Optum.
Corey Wedding.
Corey Wedding, Senior Medical Bill Review and Compliance Advisor for AF Group.
Okay. Thank you, everyone.
Thanks. Okay, so next we want to approve the minutes from the August 27th meeting. Do we have a motion to approve?
It's Leanne. I'll move to approve the minutes from last meeting.
A second.
Is Will, I'll second.
Okay. All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Okay. Motion carries. Now on to our cases and our old business. So Bob, do you want to?
Okay.
Our cases.
First one is a case from 2023, case 58, which was Region 1 versus Stone Trust and Level Solutions. This one was back and forth between Enable Comp and Stone Trust, and they were given in August. They were given until October the 1st to reach reconciliation before the committee would make a review. They did reach an agreement and paid and settled for $306,563.83. So that one is paid and closed. Case 2023, case 71, is a huge case of poor Anna had to go through 6,000 pages. We did not have the invoice, but we went ahead with the purchase orders once this was submitted by Summit, and Anna has a report. Unmute, please.
Hello, is Anna speaking first, or this is okay. Latasha Pearson? Okay.
Hey, sorry about that. Right. On this one, the provider states they were underpaid for a 78-day inpatient trauma admission. The bill did qualify for stop-loss payment and additional implant reimbursement. The fee schedule amount for the stay is $1,884,473.55. And additional allowances recommend in the amount of $386,045.16, less any contractual allowances.
Unmute, Mary.
Do we have a motion to accept the recommendation?
Did Latasha want to
respond?
Yes, sorry about that. I did. I wanted to hit I feel that our documentation submitted to the board in the committee outlines specifically how the bill was reviewed, but I just wanted to hit some high points and say that we properly followed the guidance on Tennessee rules and statutes, which follows the CMS for that inpatient calculations and outlier payment. We're following the statutes as to not allow underpayment or overpayment on these large high dollar bills. The published CMS cost to charge ratio for Vanderbilt with data submitted by the provider is 20%. The cost to provide this service is 20% of billed charges. And in this case, the Medicare recommended allowance will be $458,000 and some change. So Summit did allow payment at 300% more than the cost to charge of services rendered by Vanderbilt. And we use this as guidance for reasonable payment as, again, not to under or overpay. And then with CMS, with auditing, unbundling, billed charges, undocumented services that were billed, this would also result in lesser payment by CMS. And they would perform the same level of scrutiny that we applied in this case. We did allow partial payment on the first review due to inability to work through the itemized charges on some of the revenue codes. We did disallow undocumented and duplicative charges based on our review. And we still maintain that no payment should be allowed for those items. And we have not received additional documentation to support undocumented charges or duplicate reductions. And lastly, I would like to just address some charge master discrepancies. Pantoprazole, for example, and this is just one example I'm going to give. We have three different rates randomly charged in the billing cycle. It varies, and it's per unit. The units are the same, and there's three discrepancies in the billing of that medication alone. $194.90 per one unit, $187.99 per one unit, and $186.55 per another unit. Therefore, we question if the charge master was used and or if it's accurate in the varying rates. And I think that's the high points that I wanted to hit regarding the review of this bill.
So my question to you, do you understand that cost to charge ratio is not used in Tennessee?
Correct. We do. Again, we're not saying we're due to pay the cost to charge ratio. We're saying the amount paid on this claim is, we feel, is appropriate for the services rendered. We did pay the Tennessee outlier charges at, I believe, our last payment, or the second payment. We allowed minimum partial payment the first review, and then the second payment we allowed $1.4 million on this claim.
Anna, can you?
Yes, I mean, the review was definitely focused on paying according to the Tennessee fee schedule. And going through some of the line item things that were, you know, that were marked, I believe, as unbundled. A lot of them were labs that they had a specific component that were repeated that did in fact seem supported to me. But there were a lot of denials for a lot of reasons. So, I mean, we would have to pull that back up and go line for line for, you know, a detailed discussion of it. But, you know, essentially it was not initially paid according to the fee schedule.
And I'll just add that we did the first bill, the units and the itemization was off. So we didn't allow the completed review because we were unable to actually perform that review because of the documentation that was submitted with the first review. But we did allow minimum partial payment. So this is my first rodeo, you guys. So y'all are going to have to tell me how this works.
Typically, we're giving fee. I mean, Anna does a pretty in-depth review, but typically the payment committee is giving direction on application of the fee schedule, not as much detail about things that might cross over into medical necessity or whether 6,000 pages of documentation, you know, supports whatever is billed. So right. This is an unusual case for us. I think, and I mean, Anna's role is, here's what the fee schedule would be. If there are other disagreements about, you know, what is supported and not supported in the documentation, that's sort of outside of this meeting generally. Wouldn't you agree, Mary and Dr. Schneider?
Yes. Okay. So, in Susie, you're going to have to help me on this. In chapter 17, medical bills are to be evaluated in their entirety and not line by line.
That is correct. That's usually more applicable or used more often in a hospital outpatient setting.
Right.
And the inpatient is per diem with a stop loss, and that things can be removed that are, and I think there are very limited things that are removed that are considered personal items or something such as that that could be removed from those bills.
Understood the statement about not reviewing line by line to really be in the context of sometimes line charges are less than the fee schedule rate. So you could still recommend the fee schedule rate, even if it's more than the line charge. You look at the bill on the whole.
Yes, Leanne, you're stating that correctly, because when you look at the, it's the lesser of what right. is billed in completion, the lesser of the entire calculated fee schedule amount, which is determined by per diem and stop loss for inpatient and is determined by OPPS for outpatient, or it is the contracted rate. It is the lesser of those three. It's not a mix and match that you look at one line and say, okay, that rate is less than what we would pay per the fee schedule. So it's not mm-hmm. that type of comparison. You are correct.
Okay. So then Anna's recommendation is, here's what the fee schedule rate is. That is what this committee is going to say. That's what our final answer is going to be, right? Here's the fee schedule rate based on the per diem and the outlier for this outpatient bill. If there are other concerns from the payer side, then we don't really address that on this kind of bill.
Okay. So is there any way for us to assess what's undocumented and not supported as being completed? Because that's a little bit different than, because that does drive up the outlier payment for the, those.
Yep. Charges. I yes. know. Yeah. I don't know if I'm coming from the payer's perspective. This isn't the only recourse anybody has to resolve this kind of issue. So if it needs to go to another, to the next step, maybe that's what needs to happen with this.
Okay. I assume that we could maybe reach out to Vanderbilt and see if we could, because again, they didn't submit any additional information to support what we had disallowed, and okay. then go from there. And then if not resolved, move on to the next step.
That would be a good approach.
I agree. Yeah.
Okay.
So. Thank you all for your time.
Yeah.
Thank you for the additional information. That was helpful to know.
Okay.
And we need a motion, right, Mary?
I have to recuse myself, obviously, because it's Vanderbilt for the vote, but I can at least run this part of it. Yes.
Okay.
So we need a motion. Do we accept, do we have a motion to accept the recommendation? And Leanne, would you like to make a motion and stay word it for us? Yeah.
Yes. I will make a motion that we provide Anna's recommendation as the fee schedule rate. And that's pretty much the end of it. Our letter that will go out will sort of outline what next steps could be if the parties don't agree. And I think that'll be good.
So then the motion is to accept the recommendation as outlined?
Okay. Yes.
Okay. We have a motion to accept that?
That's my motion, yeah.
Okay. So you need a second. You have a second? Yeah. I'm sorry. Yeah.
So
you...
It's okay.
This is Jenny. I second that.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? No more discussion. All right. Thank you. Okay. The next case, then, and could y'all get the number just to make sure?
The next one is 2014, number 16.
Okay.
Shoulder surgery. This is CHC Tenova versus Gallagher Bassett. This was shoulder surgery. It was billed $257,000 and change, paid $19,000. $26,000 was expected. This case was deferred because the Tenova had not sent it back to Gallagher Bassett for a reconsideration before filing it with us. But they filed it with us to hold the time frames to be within the year. And so that case is deferred until Tenova gets an answer from Gallagher Bassett. Okay, the next one is case 19, again, Tenova versus Continental Broadspire. This is a surgical per diem and stop loss that was paid incorrectly for a knee fracture repair. billed at $106,300, paid at $54,000, expected was $62,000, and Anna has a report on this one.
Okay, this was an 8-day inpatient admission. It was a non-trauma surgical admission, which is paid at $2,347 for the first 7 days and $2,032 for each additional day. The bill also qualifies for stop loss payment and implant reimbursement. The correct fee schedule pricing is $62,052.65, and the provider is due an additional $7,472.21, less any contractual allowances.
Okay. So do we have a motion to accept the amount due provider of $7,472.21?
This is Roy Johnson. I move that we accept the recommendation.
Do we have a second?
A second.
Leanna. Oh, go ahead.
This is Carmen. A second.
Okay. Any discussion? All right. Yeah. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, motion carries.
Okay, case 20, Tenova versus DeRoyal and Travelers, an APC not correctly paid for an ER visit for shortness of breath, billed $16,691.49, and paid $19,13.59. What was expected was $25,07.12. Anna had a report on this one. But Anna, I think you and I both got this one backwards.
Oh no. Okay.
So if you look at, if you'll just run down, it looks like the payer is due an extra $47.87.
Yeah, that's what I have. Is that incorrect?
No, but it's not you in your write up. You had the provider was due the $47.87 and not the payer.
Oh, okay. I understand. Oh, goodness. Yeah, the fee schedule amount was. Oh, I see what you're saying. So there's no additional due on this one. I apologize.
Okay. So this was a case where it was paid by the APC. But in the EOR, they said that there was no authorization, failed to provide contact information for the bill review company, but there was a phone number on the EOR. And so we're recommending that there is no additional due provider.
So in the documentation we have where it says amount due, that is incorrect. It should be that there's no additional amount due.
Right. That's correct.
Okay. Right. Okay. Do we have a motion to accept the motion would be that there is no additional amount due to the provider?
I'll make the motion that there's nothing due to the provider.
Okay. Do we have a second?
I second that. This is Jenny.
Oh. Okay. Any discussion? All right. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Aye. All right. Motion carries.
Okay. Case 21. This is where this was a follow-up visit, and the patient was released at maximum medical improvement for a knee injury. They billed $350. Nothing was paid. The medical fee schedule amount was pending. This particular bill included a Z-code for a certified physician registry, but no documentation on analysis. So this case was sent back to the provider to document that they had, in fact, consulted the guides sufficiently enough to warrant the payment of not only the $250 for the final medical report, but also the extra $100 due to the certified physician. So this was sent back to the provider for documentation that they used the AMA guides and what the result was. Okay. Case 22. This was very similar. This was released for a shoulder injury. And again, there was no documentation of the guides. And so this was sent back to the provider to provide documentation that the payment should be due. Then case 24, incomplete redactions have been received in this case. It is recommended that we send the letter to give them 3 months from the this meeting to submit a satisfactorily redacted copy of the request, or we close the case. So I do need a motion for case 24.
Okay. So is there a motion to ask for a redacted copy within the next 3 months?
I motion to accept that.
Okay. Do we have a second?
I'll second it.
Any discussion? Okay. No. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Any opposed? Aye. All right. The motion carries.
Case 27 is Tenova versus Corvell. This was for outpatient hospital surgery. This case was sent back or notified Corvell, and they are taking a second look at this case. And so that case will remain deferred and pending. Case 29 was an issue where we made a utilization review determination that overturned a denial for the surgery. The surgery was carried out, but the payment was not received. This was an issue more for compliance than it was for the medical payment committee, and it's likely at this that will be resolved based upon the compliance investigation on this one. It is, however, important that the providers understand that just because the utilization review overturns a denial of a surgery case or other treatment, that does not confirm a specific authorization by the adjuster. However, if the adjuster does not comply with allowing the procedure within 7 days of notification of the overturn, then that can go to penalty. And so this is sometimes an issue with compliance more than it has to do with medical payment itself. And so this was just an issue that occasionally raised its head. It does not happen very often. Okay, case 38. This is Community Health Systems, Jefferson County versus Travelers. Laceration that was treated in the emergency room. It was billed at $4,381.60. $480 was paid, $441. The medical fee schedule amount, Anna had a report on this one.
On this one, the provider billed 963.74, 963.75, and 99282, in addition to other codes that are not separately payable under the APC payment system. Documentation does state that the patient received IV antibiotics, which supports 96374. However, there is no documentation to support administration of additional intravenous medication. So payment of 96375 would be denied, and additional payment for 96374 and 99282 is recommended in the amount of $59.67, less any contractual allowances.
Okay. So we have a motion for additional amount due the provider of $59.67.
I move to accept the recommendation.
Second?
I'll second it.
Okay. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
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 Any opposed? Okay. All right. Next case.
Case 44, Dr. A versus employer. We have a number of Dr. A's. So we have a Dr. M.A. and we have a Dr. A. So these were underpaid by the rules in 2023. They billed for psychological services. $200, they were paid $157. They expected $193.60. The medical fee schedule is is the 193.60 because they did not pay it at the recommended rate for a psychology treatment at 130% of Medicare. This was a date of service in November of 2023, so the 2023's rules were applicable at that date of service. So an additional due provider of 3630 less any contractual discounts. And this one was paid and closed. And I'll just give you a rundown. So I just ran down 44 because just to give you an idea of how those were calculated. Then if we go to case 45, case 46, case 47, case 48, isn't everybody happy?
Yeah.
Very.
And case 49, all of which had been paid and closed when they were notified of the current rules for those payments. So we're on to case 50. So this was Dr. K versus AmTrust, where this was confusing because there were underpaid codes for dates of service, of which five of them were in 2024. And it depends upon whether you look at the billed amounts versus the paid amounts and what was expected. These had to do with a contract dispute that, according to the contract, what was due was the larger amounts. The 13, and this amount would be $1,381.50, and these were all discounted. The later visits were also discounted. As a result, the physician withdrew the care and is no longer seeing AmTrust patients. The 814 visit was added to the original submission, but this again does not give us the authority to make a determination on this matter since it's a contract matter. It is, however, I think it's important that the committee understand that when these issues come up, that the best thing for us to do is refer this to the Department of Commerce and Insurance for them to evaluate these issues with contracts and applicable contracts for payers that are registered in the state. So it's my recommendation that this be referred to the administrator to be sent to, at his discretion to the Department of Commerce and Insurance.
Okay. So would you like, are you wanting a motion on that, or is that, will that, that's require a motion?
It does require a motion.
Okay. And so could you repeat that again, Dr. Snyder, and just repeat the motion one more time?
That this case be referred to the administrator at his discretion to send to the Department of Commerce and Insurance.
Okay. Do we have a motion to accept?
I'll move to accept.
Move to accept. Sorry. Thank you. Give me a second.
I second that.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay.
Case 51 is Skyline versus Key Risk. This was a disputed per diem and stop loss. Anna has a report on this, although we are going to take the report. This case has been deferred for other issues. Anna?
On this one, the billed amount was $124,326, and they were paid $10,473. And the provider is requesting additional payment for one-day inpatient admission. Inpatient non-trauma medical admissions are paid at $1,932 per day for the first 7 days, plus any additional due stop-loss payment. The correct payment for this admission is $82,417.28. and the provider is due an additional $71,944.28 less any contractual allowances.
Okay. That case is deferred, although I wanted to bring it to the committee just to let them know that we had a determination on that one. Case 52 was paid and closed, and cases 53 through 57 were paid and closed. Case 58 was JEH versus employers, where the Z code, again, this was a certified physician code, was not paid. The analysis was that the insurance or the payer was not keeping up with the fee schedule changes for the dates of service. And so in addition is due the provider $40 for the Z code on a follow-up visit, less any contractual discounts.
Okay. Have a motion to accept the recommendation.
This is Carmen. I'll make the motion to accept the recommendation.
Do you have a second?
Leanne will second.
All in favor?
Aye.
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 Any opposed? Okay, that motion carries.
Case 59 was closed. Case 60, we have a report from Anna on this one. So we'll let Anna give the report.
The provider was Tenova Cleveland. They billed $108,062 and were paid $6,748.17. And they're requesting additional payment for an open rotator cuff repair, which was billed with 23412 and the associated implants. 23412 is the status indicator J1 code. All other covered services on the claim are packaged with this primary J1 procedure. The implants, billed with C1713 have a status indicator of N, and Medicare specifies that N codes are items that are packaged in a payment for other services and have no separate APC payment. Per the fee schedule, 23412 is paid at $10,224.50. Additional allowance in the amount of $3,476.33 is recommended to the provider, less any contractual allowances. Okay. Do we have a motion to accept the recommendation?
Since Anna, poor Anna did this result, they went ahead and paid and closed the claim.
Oh.
So it's paid. Okay. So very good. So I think Anna's going to have to leave us on that. And so I want to thank her for the tremendous amount of work that she's put in. And I wish her a very happy Thanksgiving and happy Halloween.
Thank you. You all as well. Take care. Thank you.
Anna. Okay. Bye, Anna.
Okay. Case 61 is Chattanooga Orthopedics versus Hartford. The code was not paid correctly. This was a $287 bill. They paid $199. This was where a knee sleeve for a DME was not paid, but it was separately payable. And so they're due an additional $15.84.
I have a motion to accept the recommendation.
I motion to accept.
You have a second?
I'll second.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Okay.
62, Chattanooga Orthopedics underpaid for an orthopedic consultation. The code was a 26540, and the ON modifier for the orthopedic surgeon was added. There was, however, a PPO discount taken, but they did not pay the 275% of the recommended payment for the orthopedic surgeon, and so the additional is due the provider of $441.56, which this did include the PPO discount that was subtracted. So the recommendation is for an additional $441.56.
Okay. Do we have a motion to accept the recommendation?
I'll make them.
Okay.
Roy and.
That's right.
Okay.
Discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Aye. Oops, sorry.
63 was a similar case. The OAN modifier was included on the bill and not paid at the correct percentage. The additional due the provider of $656.73.
Do we have a motion to accept the recommendation?
I'll make that motion.
Okay, second?
I'll second it.
Right. All in favor?
Aye.
Okay. A lot of these cases are one-offs. They don't appear to follow a pattern. That is, they seem to be different payers. So it isn't as if there's just one bill review company that's not paying at the correct rate. So sometimes it's difficult to tell who the actual bill review company is, but most of these seem to be a one-off and not specific to one procedural error by one company. The next one is Tenova Shared Services versus Federated Rural Electric. In this case, they did not follow the rate tables for service after April the 1st of 2024. The billed amount was $56,162.17. The expected amount was $28,381.51, and the rate tables were $28,381.51. So an additional due the provider of $16,092.49, less any contractual discounts.
Do we have a motion to accept the recommendation?
So moved as well.
Second?
I second.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
All
right.
Any opposed? All right. Motion carries.
Okay. 65 was closed. 66 was Volunteer Surgery versus Hartford. This was an incomplete redaction being obtained, and so that was deferred. Case 67 was the same for an incomplete redaction. Case 68 was Chattanooga Orthopedics versus Zenith. This case, we were just notified, I believe, yesterday by Zenith that they had not been notified by Chattanooga Orthopedic Group that this case had been submitted to the Medical Payment Committee, which is required under the rules. And so we will notify Chattanooga Orthopedics that this case has been deferred and give them 90 days to resubmit the case after notifying Zenith. Case 69 was closed. Case 70 was Tenova versus AUI and GenX, again, underpayment by the rate tables for charges after April the 1st of 2024, bill charges of $5,388, paid only $709.57, expected was $1,064.36. The medical fee schedule is the $1,064.36. So an additional due the provider of $354.79. In this case, the discount was already included.
Okay. Do you have a motion to accept the recommendation?
I'll make that motion.
Okay. Second?
I'll second.
Okay. Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Any opposed? Okay. Motion carries.
Case 71, this case was deferred. There was no reconsideration from Tenova to GenX, and so it was deferred and sent back to the provider to resubmit for a reconsideration. The same is true of case 72. It will be resubmitted to the payer for reconsideration. Case 73, JEH versus Travelers, again, a denied Z code. This was a billed service for three things, for a Z code, for an office visit, and for a drug screen code. Interestingly enough, the drug screen code was paid, and Z code and the office visit code were both denied. In this case, which is a date of service that's after the application of the Z codes, there was two dates of service that were sent for this one, which made it very confusing. But for the date of service of 5/15/2024, the payment expected was $340.90. That's what the fee schedule is, $340.90. So an additional due the provider of $238 less any contractual discounts.
Dr. Schneider, that one's been paid and closed.
Okay, great.
Just within the last few days.
Yeah. Okay. Guess what, everybody? We're finished, and I'm hoarse.
Wow. That was a great job.
Thank you, everybody. Yes.
It's a great job.
Thank you so much.
And I appreciate y'all's tolerance. My computer wasn't cooperating. I didn't have my agenda at the first, so I was trying to do this by memory. So I appreciate your tolerance of my clumsiness. Okay, now I have it. So the medical fee schedule update, Dr. Schneider, are you doing that?
Yes. All I have to do is find my paper.
I know that feeling.
Give me just a second here amongst all this stuff.
I know.
There we go. Got it. Okay. So this is the current update for the medical fee schedule. And I'm going to kind of read what we've done. So the provider reimbursements have not kept up with inflation since 2016, falling behind by almost 25% because of the continuing downward slide of the Medicare conversion factor. In addition, Medicare is proposing another 2.8% reduction for 2025. Protecting physician reimbursements has been a struggle with Medicare's constant rate reductions on top of widespread and increasingly punitive bill review discount policies. This has led to a fall in the number of physicians that are willing to treat injured workers, making it very difficult to find providers in many subspecialties. This is not only true for Tennessee, but this is true across some other states that we're aware of. So the fee schedule has not been adjusted even to keep up with inflation since 2016. In an attempt to simplify and improve reimbursements, we proposed to consolidate the individual practitioners' percentages from 6 to 3. So we presently have 6 different percentages. We're proposing a drop to 3. And removing one of the modifiers. The recommended payment practitioner percentages would be ortho and neuro would remain at 275%. All other physicians, specialties, E&M codes, and general medicine codes would be at 200%. Chiropractors and other all other therapies would be at 180%. Psychologists would get 85% of their physician rates. And this would also eliminate the need for the extra OP modifier that we placed 2 years ago. This would bring the provider reimbursements to about the same level as 2016 if we adjusted for inflation. Anesthesia charges remain at the high end and in line with the Southeast states according to Fair Health data. So we are not proposing any changes in anesthesia rates. We would like to add a CP modifier to help to identify the certified physician programs and therefore eliminate the need to look at all of these Z codes. Last year, the APNs and PAs who assisted in surgery got an increase when their percentages were tied to their surgeons. We made some other technical corrections, but this did not impact the affected reimbursements. We then had this priced out according to NCCI, and the impact would be a total of 6% increase in the medical cost component for workers' compensation for the state of Tennessee or approximately a 3.7% increase in overall system costs. This is in line, but less than the overall inflation rate over the last 2 years. So where we stand with this is the rules revision incorporating these particular changes have been sent to the governor's office. The actual red line version of these rules will not be available until the governor approves a hearing, approves us to have a public hearing. And at that time, once the public hearing is announced, then the red line version of these changes will be available to everyone. Questions?
Dr. Snyder, we also sent that information to the members of the Workers' Compensation Advisory Council for comments. We have not received any comments yet, but we're still entertaining any potential input from the Advisory Council on Workers' Compensation.
Thank you.
Bob, I have one question. If I understood, the psychologist was at 85%. I was just curious the thought on that when the other therapies were at 180%, and with the others, given that, you know, I know there's been some challenges when there's been mental health issues engaging providers. Was there any specific thought to that or?
Well, this was in line with how CMS pays.
Okay.
Psychologists.
Okay.
Okay. So that's really why it was kind of parenthetically a little bit different.
Okay.
Currently, the payment for psychologists is 136% of Medicare, and 85% of 200 brings them up almost to 170%. So.
Okay. All right. Let's see. I understand now. Thank you. Any other questions for Bob? Okay. If there's no more on that, we have the AMA guides update.
Okay. So the AMA has released the what is called the AMA guide 6th edition 2024. This includes changes to the permanent impairment ratings for all of the musculoskeletal chapters, which means chapters 15, 16, and 17, which include upper extremity, lower extremity, and spine. This is being evaluated by the Medical Advisory Committee with the help of the AMA, allowing the committee to review these. I'm bringing it to this committee to announce that on December the 3rd, the Medical Advisory Committee will be meeting with the and review the guides again. And so if there's anyone on this committee or on this call that would like to attend that meeting, that will be Tuesday, December the 3rd at 1 p.m.
And is that going to be an in-person meeting? Will it also be a Teams meeting or online?
It'll be both. Yes. Okay,
and if somebody's interested in that meeting, how would they get the invitation?
Just send me an email or send Susie an email.
Okay, so if you're interested. Okay. Okay, all right. And I see we have a question, Kenneth.
Yeah, thank you very much, Mary. Dr. Snyder, will you also be looking at the adoption of the 2023 update for the nervous system, which may not have been promulgated previously?
All of the changes since the 2021.
Thank you.
Okay. Any other questions? Okay. And announcements. Any announcements, okay. Bob?
Yes, I've got a couple. First one, we've received a complaint concerning scheduling repeat injections. And so if, particularly if there's a series of injections being given, then an E&M code cannot be billed on the follow-up injections. So if there's a series of injections scheduled, the first one can bill an E&M code if there's serious discussion serious attempt at deciding that that's the appropriate treatment. But then on the follow-up injections, if there's a second or third injection, then you cannot bill an E&M code. And this was according to Medicare guidelines for evaluation and management services, particularly for intra-articular injections for knees, although it may also apply to other series of injections.
And if there's a separate separate discussion of another, like if they have another injury or illness that's being evaluated at the same time, I assume that's not what you're talking about. You're talking about if they're coming back only for that injection.
Correct.
Okay. Okay. Any questions about that? Okay. Any other announcements? You said you had a couple.
Yes. The second one, we have been notified that by one of our long-term correspondents concerning payment issues, particularly with smaller practices and subspecialties, that they would rather have 135% of Medicare from commercial getting paid in 10 days than having to wait a month and have to fight for 180% of for workers' compensation. So there's a systemic issue with payment issues. And so I'm just making the point that the payment issues are what's driving more physicians and particularly the subspecialists away from taking workers' compensation patients. We have tried as best we can to strengthen our ability to enforce payment issues under the claims handling standards that apply to adjusters. But just be aware that the systemic issues in payments and workers' compensation may not be solved just by increasing the fees. There's more systemic issues involved.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I'll see our next meeting.
Great announcement. Susie has been appointed assistant administrator starting in January of 2025. And so, congratulations to Susie. So that means that we'll be working with a new medical services coordinator. We don't know who that is yet, but congratulations to Susie on a well-deserved promotion.
And I guess it's kind of out of the question that part of her, they could, the job description for her, the assistant, could change to do what Susie's doing now.
I bet she'll be too busy to do that.
Okay.
I mean, I'm open to it, but.
Susie, you're just so amazingly, you and Bob are so amazingly wonderful in all that you do. So congratulations to you.
Thank you
for everything you do have been doing for us forever. Good choice. Okay. Well, that's a little sad and a little happy at the same time. Yeah. So, good. All right. Now, any other announcements from anyone? Okay, if not, our next meeting is Tuesday, December the 17th.
Before we announce that, could you all look at your calendars, members of the committee, to confirm that we will have a quorum?
I'll be here.
I should be available.
Yeah.
Okay.
It should be for me.
I'm good as well.
Okay. Will, be still there?
Yeah, I was checking. Yeah, I don't see an issue with that.
Okay. And Carmen, if you would let Josh know, or he could ask you to do it too.
I will let him know that it's the 17th okay. December.
Okay. And thank you for participating. We appreciate it.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Okay. So the meeting is on, Mary. Okay.
All right. Meeting is on. Tuesday, December 17th at 1 o'clock, I take it. All right. Okay. All right. So do we have any other exciting business to deal with? Not.
Generally, if you look at your calendars, the second meeting is Tuesday, February the 11th.
Ah.
So if you'll look at your calendars and we can look at that in December, but just if you'll look at your calendars and
okay.
try to plan ahead, we appreciate it. And we appreciate so much everybody's participation in this committee.
Our first 2025 planning that I've had across the board. Whoa.
2025.
Well, I hope everybody's going to have a good Thanksgiving. So on that note, and Halloween, do we have a motion to adjourn?
I'll make that motion.
A second. Okay. All right. I'll take it all in favor. It's good.
Yep.
All right. Thanks so much. Be safe. Enjoy Halloween.
Thank you.
Thank you guys. Bye, everyone. Take care.
Bye, everyone. Bye.